Windows SDKs with Alvin Ashcraft.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. They are hiring architects as well as .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect, so you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. And if you have a comment or question for the show, you can send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. And also, my new online TV show has launched. You can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories or on YouTube. And you can also find it at www.palermo.network. And it is what it sounds like. You're literally going to watch me program. And it's a lot of fun. Today on the show, my guest is Alvin Ashcraft. He has over 27 years of programming experience in the healthcare, finance, manufacturing industries. He is a content developer for Microsoft, and he creates docs for Windows developers on docs.microsoft.com. And he's also authored a book for Packet Publishing titled Learn WinUI 3. And he's working on his second book, Parallel Programming and Concurrency with C# 10 and .NET 6. And that book is out. It's due out in the fall of 2022. And he's also one of the founders and organizers of the Tech Bash Developer Conference that's held annually at the Kalahari Resort in Pocono Manor, Pennsylvania. And in his previous life, he worked for consulting firms as a software developer. And during those years, he developed solutions for clients in manufacturing, finance, and healthcare. And he is a big, big blogger, technology geek, family guy, and also a former Microsoft MVP. And he has a wonderful wife and three amazing daughters. And if anybody is not subscribed to or seen his website, The Morning Dew, it's been going for 15 years. And we'll get into that. But Alvin, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Doing well, thanks. It's good to be here.
Oh, happy to have you on the podcast. You've been a organizer of Tech Bash and other conferences and getting everybody organized and pulling people in. So now I'm doing it to you. Well, there's a lot of people who've kind of followed your work and your writing and of course, been the beneficiary to your conference organizing. But for those who might not have landed on your work, tell us about The Morning Dew. Or is there anything that's longer running that you've done more than The Morning Dew?
I don't think so. No, that kind of kicked it all off. It kind of just started as my own kind of read it later list.
Yeah.
Yep. My own way of kind of creating bookmarks and go back and read blog posts later. It also kept me from emailing and harassing some of my coworkers saying, look at this cool link, look at this cool link. So instead, I just go put them up on the website and they can go read them on their own time. So I started that 15 years ago in November. And yeah, every day, post links there. I use a website called NewsBlur to aggregate all the blogs that I follow. And I tag those and I've got a plugin that I use for, I don't know if you remember Windows Live Writer.
Yes.
Blogging software. Yep. So that became Open Live Writer. It's open source. And I have a plugin that I wrote for that that goes out and queries all the stuff that I've flagged and builds a blog post for me. I have to do a little bit of tweaking and massaging to it each day, but It's pretty well automated at this point.
Nice. Okay. So Morning Dew, give the listeners the website where they can check that out.
It's just alvinashcraft.com.
Okay. And so 15 years ago, if I do my math right, that was 2007?
Yep.
Okay. I'm trying to remember back what was going on in 2007. Twitter was not a thing. I think they had launched, but nobody was using Twitter. It was very early, right? So
right.
What was the set the scene for all the, I mean, there's tons of developers who, you know, started programming well after that, you know, if they're in their first 5 years of development. set the stage. What was it like back in 2007 in the whole developer media scene that you remember?
Wow, that's hard to remember. Let's see, we had MVPs back then, obviously. That was back into the 90s. So a lot of the blogs I followed were Microsoft MVPs. Back then, we used Google Reader before they shut right. that down. So I used that and used their APIs to pull in the blog posts. I think back then I probably followed maybe 100 or two blogs. Now I've got over 1,500 feeds.
RSS, yeah.
Yes, RSS feeds, yeah.
I mean, now people don't even think about, oh, subscribing to an RSS feed, because podcasts and social media has kind of taken over blogging. But blogging was, I mean, RSS existed before then, I think, but blogging really made RSS a thing, if I remember correctly.
It did, yeah.
And yeah, so RSS Bandit was one that I remember using.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that one. And I think Chrome may have had something built into it for a while too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a ton of people blogging, and blog sites like .NET Junkies and CodeBetter.com and so many others.
Yeah, .NET Kicks would aggregate .NET things.
Yep. Okay. So you flag just sites that you think are worthy. And what exactly does NewsBlur do for you?
So it's basically a Google Reader clone. So they came up when Google Reader was shut down. I think Feedly is another one that's out there that does kind of the same thing. So you can add RSS feeds to that and categorize them, and then you can go through and, you know, read the posts. You can save them for later, share them. NewsBlur has this thing called Blur Blog, where anything that you share goes out onto this, and it looks like a blog, and it's just a list of posts that you've shared on there.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So yeah, I take that API and just pull all those in each morning, build the morning do.
And I'll concur on the open live writer. It was great that it kind of got updated so it could still work. Is that you currently still use open live writer today?
Yeah, I'm still using that today. Okay. It's the plugin support. It was never really launched, but I don't know if you know Scott Lovegrove over in the UK. He was working on that piece and he gave me some pre-release bits and a tool to be able to put my plugin into that.
Okay. Is it in the form where that plugin is out there and able to be used, or is it just a kind of private plugin you wrote for yourself?
It's open source. I've got it up on GitHub, so anybody can go and pull it down and customize it for their own needs if they like.
Nice. And your github.com/?
Alvin Ashcraft.
Okay, and they'll find it there. Awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I know there's a lot of people who've kind of basically made you their news source. I certainly have, just because you do such a good job of all the things that are happening in the Microsoft developer space.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. It's cool that people still follow along 15 years later.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, there's a public service of suggesting things to pay attention to when probably so much out there you don't need to pay attention to. And
right.
We only have limited time. So, well, you work for Microsoft now in content development, focusing on all things Windows or Windows SDKs. Tell us about what you do at Microsoft and the bounds of it.
Sure. So I joined them just this past March. I work in the Windows developer docs, and it was docs.microsoft.com, like you mentioned, but just this week they rebranded the whole site to learn.microsoft.com.
Okay.
So it's Microsoft Learn, and you can go /docs to get to the docs pages.
Okay.
And so I work in the Windows developer docs, and that encompasses Win32 stuff. UWP is still out there. The Windows App SDK is the latest and greatest developer technology. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got a little bit of .NET MAUI docs, since you can target Windows and WinUI with that as well.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the extent of it. We do the API docs, and then we've got samples and how-to guides, getting started stuff, release notes, all those kind of things fall into the docs there.
Okay. So I'm imagining that in order to be able to write those docs, which effectively tell developers, hey, in order to use this technology or library, here's the steps, 1, 2, 3, that you have to use those libraries and actually learn all those libraries and tools. Is that right?
Right. We've got to learn the libraries, and we've also got to track down the product teams and find out from them how to use the libraries at times.
So would I be overstating it to say that the people who work in documentation development have to effectively be and become expert users of all these frameworks and tools?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. Yeah. We've got to have a pretty good understanding to be able to write about it and teach others.
So when you normally think about being a technical writer, if in this type of technical writer, you're doing a whole lot of coding.
Yes, for sure. And it's not just the code that you see on the website. We've got to, you know, do code on our own desktops to be able to write about how to use it.
Nice, nice. Well, you mentioned release notes. I think every developer that pushes out anything has to pull those. Is there a process or set of tools these days that is kind of, has the dust settled on how to generate release notes for new builds of software?
I don't think the dust has settled yet. There's still some manual work there, but I think it's getting to be automated where you can pull in lists of PRs and things from GitHub and other repos.
Is there a tool chain that you see popular or you prefer?
I haven't gotten into that much with the release notes yet there, but
okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned MAUI. Is there just a certain section of MAUI that Windows will touch on, or is it because it's new that they're not kind of built out yet?
Yeah, it's still pretty new, the Windows support. And I think right now the main focus with MAUI is getting to parity with Xamarin Forms. Mm-hmm. Make sure that everybody that's on Xamarin Forms can move over to MAUI and not have any issues or gaps there.
Okay. So you got to be a tester to see what the issues and gaps are, right?
Right.
Since it's new, there's always going to be issues and gaps.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Have y'all identified kind of any big ones already that listeners should know about?
No, I think, well, there's one interesting thing that came up. Dave Britch, who works on the MAUI docs, mm-hmm. he was able to just get working video playback.
Okay.
So he got that working across all three platforms. It's just coming in a preview release of WinUI later this year, and he was able to use the latest preview to get that working with all three platforms, iOS, Android, and Windows.
Nice, nice.
Very exciting.
Well, yeah, if you think of MAUI apps, everybody plays videos on a smartphone.
Right.
Cool. Tell us about your book coming up. If it's out later this year, that means, is the manuscript done at this point, or you still have a little bit to polish off?
Everything's done, and it actually came out a little bit early. So I think August 30th was the date when it hit and people started getting in their mailbox.
Okay, so it's out now. So listeners can go grab it.
Yeah, I've got two books out there now.
Nice.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
So you decided to do a book on parallel programming and concurrency. Yes. What was there an event? What said, you know what? That's going to be my book. That's cool stuff and people need to know it.
Well, I've had Peck Publishing. They came to me a bunch of times over the years with different topics and titles and ideas. And this one I decided to jump on because it's something I spent a lot of time working in mm-hmm. when I worked for a company called Allscripts doing healthcare software. Spent a number of years trying to tune and tweak the software using concurrency and parallel programming to get things faster. It was an app for charting that doctors used mm-hmm. and the hospitals could build their own forms basically. And these forms, they got huge where they would have thousands and thousands of controls on these forms that we serialized and deserialized so that the loading was getting slower and slower as they made these things bigger. So we used parallelism to optimize that. So I've had bunch of years experience doing that. And when this topic came up, I decided to jump on that.
Okay. So as far as the techniques go, are they different now with .NET 6 or are they kind of similar going back for all of .NET?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. I think a lot of it going back to .NET 4.5, mm-hmm. .NET Framework 4.5 is when a lot of the async await and a lot of the parallel fours and for eaches, those kinds of things all kind of came out.
Okay. So not .NET 2 or .NET 3.5, really async await kind of unlocked a bunch of stuff that are exciting.
Yeah. That's when things got a lot simpler for devs, I think, when they could do the async await using tasks and all that, made a lot easier than just using the threading.
Okay. I'd like to get your opinion on that. There's, you know, a lot of people talk about what I've heard called the viral nature of the async and tasks. And if you have a library that uses it, well, now all of your code has to do it too.
Right.
Do you let 100% of your code become async, or do you intentionally try to encapsulate and transition it back to synchronous code?
I think these days when I start a new app, I try and just use it throughout. Because, okay. I mean, everything you're doing on the back end is pretty much either hitting a database or you're hitting a service or some kind of thing that's going to be using async await. And then, yeah, I try to use it all the way up to the UI.
Okay. Do you even let it flow through into even just simple methods on entity classes?
If it's not necessary, I won't do it. It's typically where I hit something where there's some IO involved.
Okay. So in a code chain that's going to hit head to IO. That makes sense. And you mentioned Parallel 4. I think that there's a lot of developers still to this day, I think, that don't know that that's out there or how to use it. Can you give us a quick briefing on what that is?
Sure. It's kind of like a regular for loop, but anything inside the body there is going to be put into you'd have the thread pool out there to be able to run that body on multiple threads. And same thing with parallel.foreach. So you'd have the body of that being run on multiple threads at the same time. So you have to be careful what you're running in there, obviously, that it's thread safe. But it can definitely give you some quick improvements.
Is that built in now, or is that a NuGet package?
That's all built in.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
I think the one piece that's still a NuGet package is there's the TPL data flow blocks. I don't know if you've used those at all.
What are those?
Gives you a set of objects for kind of orchestrating large data flows.
Okay.
So there's you can have different building blocks of work. It's kind of hard to explain in an audio format.
As long as they know how to Google it. So yeah, it's called definitely. TPL data blocks?
It's the TPL data flow library.
Okay. We'll just leave a link to that in the show notes for listeners who want to kind of dive into that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Okay. Now you've been also you were the founder or one of the founders for Tech Bash?
One of the founders of Tech Bash. It was me, Jason Gaylord, Andy Schwamm, Devin Rader, and Jess Chadwick and Brian Manisi were the original ones.
And that conference has had a long run as well, hadn't it?
Yeah, 2016 was our first event.
Okay. And you got one coming up this fall.
Yep. November 8th to the 11th.
And it still has tickets available?
Yes. Registration's open. We've got 3 and 4 day registrations. If you do the 4 day, you get a full day workshop.
Okay. And for anyone had never been to a Kalahari resort, tell us what those are like. What's it like having a conference at that place?
Oh, that's a great time. I mean, they've got the huge conference space with, everything's modern there. They've got the fastest internet I've ever had at a conference. And yeah, the water park is amazing. Until the new Kalahari down by you in Texas opened up, I think we had the largest one in North America up here in Pennsylvania until then.
Are you saying that the Austin one's bigger?
Yeah, Austin's bigger than the Pocono one.
Well, so with that one, now Austin has two water parks. And then about 45 minutes south, just outside the city limits, is the Schlitterbahn Water Park.
Nice.
But Texas is hot, so the season for water parks is pretty long, even if it's outdoors. But
yeah, up in the Northeast here, it's nice to have the big indoor water park. I think it's 200,000 square feet or so.
That's huge.
It's huge. It was the largest in North America until you guys. Everything's bigger in Texas, though.
I think, last winter, I took the family to Pennsylvania to go skiing. Now it's kind of at the end of the season a little bit in March, but it was one of the in the Poconos area, and I was struck by on the mountain on the ski lift. I'm looking down, and half buried in snow are these water slides on the side of the mountain. And it's, I looked at it, I'm like, wow, I guess during the warm months, this mountain is a big old water slide park. And then when it snows, is that normal to your area? Or
they try and dual purpose things up here. Water parks on the ski slopes. They do bike trails and things.
Yeah. I'd only been skiing in Colorado and I haven't seen that there. So that's interesting. That was pretty cool. So I guess the ski lifts can run year round. Just go up the mountain. That's a long water slide to the top of the mountains.
Yeah, that would be huge.
Cool. So just kind of back to Tech Bash, what can people expect to find there? Do y'all focus on certain Microsoft technologies, or do y'all do everything, including Azure and Microsoft 365?
Yeah, we do pretty much everything. There's cloud stuff. There's some Windows stuff. There's web dev, everything you can imagine. Workshops. I'm trying to think. Like Kubernetes, we've got a Kubernetes workshop and application security. Mm-hmm. We've got some guys from Microsoft coming in to do a low-code workshop with enterprise development. Mm-hmm. And then there's another guy coming in to do building React Native apps with GraphQL on the back end. Mm-hmm. All kinds of different topics.
Nice, nice. Well, why don't we kind of end, since you're in the space of Windows, mm-hmm. kind of project forward. Where do you see Windows going in the future? There's been so much change, not just Windows Server, but also Windows Desktop, and Linux desktops really never materialized, but Mac is really strong out there. But a lot of people are using iPads with keyboards as laptops. And then you have the Windows tablets and all that. Windows Phone kind of went away. Now smartphone, you got Android. So when it comes to Windows, where do you see it going, and what should we expect over the next 10 years?
Wow. Next 10 years. I imagine that with Windows development, it seems like there's just more and more attempts to try and get that cross-platform story right. So I think soon you're going to see, whether it's MAUI or something else in the next 10 years, I think there's going to be something from Microsoft that's going to get the cross-platform story out there for devs to be able to have that dream of the single code base. And with Windows itself, I don't know, we got to keep an eye on those Surface guys and see what they come out with.
Okay.
Surface Studio is pretty cool.
So that group is still very much a silo. They kind of keep all the info secret.
Yeah, even inside Microsoft, it's hard to find out what's going on in there with those guys.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the hardware, they've got their stiff competition with Apple for hardware, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But on the software side, that write once, run anywhere. I remember when I was in school kind of being taught the Sun Microsystems vision for Java, which was write once, run anywhere. And they kind of got write once, run in a lot of places. And certainly, run in a ton of places, because Java has gone everywhere now. It's huge. But for desktop apps, Java never really landed really well for desktop apps, of course, until Google did their Android thing.
Right.
With the state of the docs and the testing for MAUI, in your opinion, do we have it now?
I think it's getting there. I mean, they still don't, there's no Linux story there yet, so it's not everywhere.
Yeah.
But I did see that, I think there's a fork out there somewhere where somebody's working on a Linux port for that, so we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. What about Chromebooks? In the last few years, Chromebooks have been pushed everywhere, just with literally every elementary school is in your hand out Chromebooks. Has anything been going on there?
There's nothing I've heard from Microsoft, but if you see the way Edge is going, they've got that sidebar on the right side now where they've got some apps running. You can have your Outlook running inside there. And even I have a Gmail app there too. I can open up my Gmail from the side of Edge. So I don't know if that's maybe an early indication that they're thinking of something along the Chromebook lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But,
Edge books.
Right. I kind of twisted the arm of Minecraft Java Edition to install on the Chromebook, but not regular Chromebook, through the Linux, the embedded Linux developer mode that's in the Chromebook. So it's not actually Chrome OS, it's Linux, but which
nice.
Kind of, Windows has a subsystem for Linux similar. But man, it's a good time to be a developer, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, there's so much out there for us.
Yep. Awesome. Hey, well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Before we kind of close up, is there anything anything else you want to point the listeners to that they should be paying attention to? Of course, besides the just dozens and dozens of links that you just put out this morning on your morning do.
Yeah. Just check out my links. Feel free to check out my books, the Win UI book that came out last year and the new parallel programming one. And so you can follow me. I'm pretty much Alvin Ashcraft everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, GitHub. Yep. Look me up out there.
Nice. Awesome. We'll include a link to all those things in the show notes for the listeners.
Nice.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time and coming on. Alvin, good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
My pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.